Hello, and welcome to Women Taking the Lead. I'm going to start us off today by reading a quote I read not too long ago of my guest today. As leaders in an increasingly polarized society, it's crucial that we recognize the talent within our organizations. Incredible talents are often overlooked, underutilized, or placed in situations that are bound to fail. The consequence of this is stagnant teams and underperforming businesses because our people feel disconnected. However, it's not the people who are broken. It's our organizational systems that require fixing. That is a bold statement made by Dr. Mary Claire Race, the president of Talking Talent. Dr. Mary Claire Race is recognized for her remarkable career spanning 4 continents. She has played a pivotal role in facilitating business improvements for globally renowned organizations, including Barclays, Goldman Sachs, GSK, Unilever, Coca-Cola, and Estee Lauder companies, as well as governmental organizations, including the British government, Cabinet Office, and the UK National Health Service. A prominent figure in her field, Dr. Race's research contributions have been published in reputable journals such as Frontiers in Psychology, Mental Illness at Work, and People in Strategy, while her expertise features in industry-leading publications including the Harvard Business Review, People Management, and the Financial Times. Talking Talent is a team of business psychologists, coaches, talent specialists, and diversity leaders committed to creating workplaces where everyone feels valued and respected. With almost 2 decades of experience, they know that the best way to ensure business success and resiliency is by building spaces where people feel like they truly belong. Through their coaching-led approach, they help individuals and organizations develop the skills and behaviors they need to create a culture of belonging. And Talking Talent has delivered award-winning DE&I programs and coaching within world-renowned organizations, including Disney, NatWest, Lloyds Bank, Citi, Ernst & Young, and many, many more. And clients have reported a 56% increase in job performance and £100 million saved each year in retention costs through a 50% reduction in the risk of staff turnover. Okay, I know I've really gone over Dr. Mary Claire Race's expertise and Talking Talent because I really want that to set the foundation for the conversation to come. Because in this episode, Mary Claire and I discuss the history of DEI and the current state of DEI efforts around the globe, the importance of considering the ecosystem versus the individual when looking at change, where companies can make investments in the coming year to see meaningful progress, how the most effective programs will both customize to the organization and personalize to the individual, and why, when psychological safety is introduced to a team or organization, the issues can appear to get worse before they get better. It will completely make sense in this conversation. And if you are new to the Women Taking the Lead podcast, hello and welcome. I'm Jody Flynn, the CEO and founder of Women Taking the Lead, a leadership development company that helps leaders achieve their gender parity goals at all levels of leadership and in all divisions of the organization. We help to realize these results through consulting, coaching, leadership development programs, and keynotes. My goal is for this podcast to be a valuable resource for you and others in your organization of all genders to grow in your leadership. If we are not already connected on LinkedIn, please send me an invitation to connect. You can find me directly at linkedin.com/IN/Jody Flynn, or you can search on the platform for Jody Flynn. I'm very active on LinkedIn, so I should be at or near the top of the search results. Be sure to add a note to the invitation letting me know that you're a listener of the podcast. I would love to connect with you and get to know you better. Dr. Mary Claire Race, welcome to the Women Taking the Lead podcast.
Thank you, Jody. It is an honor and a pleasure to be here.
I'm excited. So everyone has heard your professional bio and all of the amazing things that you have done in the areas of talent development and diversity, equity, and inclusion. But before we really dive into our conversation, could you share a little bit more with everyone about where you are and what you do when you're not working?
Yes, absolutely. Well, and the listeners won't be able to see this, but you'll be able to see that it's starting to get dark here. So I am on the other side of the Atlantic. I live just outside of Dublin in Ireland, and I split my time between here and then the UK. So mostly London and various other cities around the world, but primarily London. And yeah, I grew up in Northern Ireland, actually, and spent most of my life, you know, dotting around different cities around the world. I lived in Melbourne, Australia. I lived in London for over 10 years. And more recently, up until COVID, was living in New York. And I think I was one of those fortunate people where COVID brought an opportunity that I had never thought was going to be possible for me, which was to live back in the country where I grew up and to have a more balanced life. So I'm a big lover of the outdoors. I have horses, I have dogs, my four-legged brood is growing by the day. And I think the COVID gave us an opportunity to experiment with what our careers and what work could look like in the context of our broader life. So when New York went into lockdown, I took the opportunity. I mean, at the time I thought I was going to be coming back to Ireland for a couple of weeks, as we all thought it was going to last. Yes. And then, yeah, here we are 4 years later. So that's where I am joining you from today.
It sounds lovely. I'm just picturing your day-to-day life there in Ireland. And it sounds like, for me, I know everyone has different preferences, but for me, that would be the dream as well, to just be around more nature, animals, having that. I could just imagine breathing fresh air and just hearing nature sounds all day. Yeah. So that's lovely.
Yeah, it certainly helps with keeping grounded. Although I would say sometimes it feels like living in New York was less chaotic than managing all of the animals and their different needs. So it's not always a case of the grass being greener on the other side.
Yes. And recently you've also been promoted and taken on a new role. That is something the women listening to this podcast can definitely relate to, that experience of you've recently taken on more responsibility. You have a larger role in the organization. How has that transition been going for you?
Yeah, it's been a busy time. So it's my first CEO role. I feel very fortunate that it's within a business that I'm really passionate about and doing work that is so important in the world. And Talking Talent and I actually go way back many years ago. I actually was a client of theirs. So it feels very much like coming home, and I can't think of a better place to be stepping into the CEO role for the first time. But yeah, there's a lot to get a grip on and lots of big plans for the year. And it's exciting and busy.
Yes. I imagine it's a one day at a time sort of thing. You have the big goals, but you can't tackle them all at once. You just have to take it one day at a time.
Yeah, absolutely.
I love that. Okay. So speaking of Talking Talent, I would love for you, because you are fully immersed in the world of DEI, and actually just going back and giving some context, when did DEI start becoming a really big buzzword? Because I remember before the pandemic, I heard about it, people were talking about it. It was like, oh, that's great. Like, companies are taking this on as an initiative. But during the pandemic, it really blew up. But like I was hearing some things like, it's not working. It's working. No, it's not. Studies are saying it doesn't. And now it feels like we're coming out of the pandemic and it's like, No, this absolutely is important. So what has been your journey in the DEI realm?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I would say, I mean, the industry, you can trace it back, I think, probably 20 years ago, companies were beginning to think about harnessing the benefits of diversity. So when the industry first, you know, we started getting going with this, it really was just diversity that we were thinking about and how did we increase representation of different groups in the world of business. I think as we began to learn things and experiment and try different things, organizations then began to see that diversity on its own isn't enough and you also need to have inclusion. And then in time, again, as we learned more and the body of research increased around this area, we saw that, you know, equity was also important and we also needed to think about belonging. So it's really, I think it's been a transition and a journey to learn about what does it take to really get this right. How I've seen organizations respond to that, I think 2020 was a real catalyst year. I think before that, it was a priority for organizations and you saw lots of businesses appointing diversity teams and chief diversity officers and absolutely investing in it. But 2020 became a big catalyst for lots of reasons. I think the COVID pandemic, you know, as I referenced earlier, did give us this opportunity to experiment with what work means for different people and is it working for us and is it working for all groups. And then also there was all of the events around the world and particularly some of the events in North America that propelled it onto the mainstream stage. And really, I think at that point, businesses saw that this was an imperative and that if they were to be attractive employers and, you know, continue to gain market share in whatever industry they're in, they needed to be thinking about this in a very different way than what they had done before. Now, I think some of what has happened, and I often refer to 2020 was almost like the gold rush for the DEI industry, was I think, you know, we maybe rushed at solutions that weren't always effective and weren't serving the goal of bringing people together more effectively and building more inclusion. And in some instances, they actually pushed people further apart and left greater polarization in organizations. And I think some of what you reference where, you know, the narrative can be it doesn't work, it's a waste of time. And then other people saying, no, it's really important, I think is very much born out of that, where, you know, we didn't go about it in perhaps with the intention that would have led to the meaningful results that, you know, we know can be achieved with this work.
Mm-hmm. And it sounds like that common problem of we get distracted by the symptoms and try to address the symptoms as opposed to the root causes. And it sounds like the work initially was pouring a lot of time and energy and resources into addressing the symptoms. And the realization was like, came back to, oh no, we have to get at the root problems. Has that been your understanding of what happened as well?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, I mean, what we've seen, again, if you look back to the very beginning of this work, and I, you know, talk about the last 20 years, a sense of let's put solutions in place that help individuals to be different. So whether that's, okay, women need to lead with more confidence, or they need to overcome their, you know, that tired term of imposter syndrome, or you know, whatever label we might put on it. It's okay, let's give them something to do differently. And then, okay, well, the leadership population, they're not creating enough inclusion, or they're not building psychological safety. So let's give them something to do that's different to what they've been doing before. And all of those things will get you so far. But, you know, we talk about you can't put all of the burden of change at the feet of the individual. You've also got to consider the ecosystem that they exist within. So, you know, what's actually happening within their organization and what is the culture in their organization? And then also the broader society and the broader, you know, that at the macro level, what kind of culture where do they live? Like, what are the norms in that environment? And if you don't tackle those things, you will only get so far with, you know, that fixation on, okay, let's put these things in place, as you said, the symptoms rather than the root cause. And again, we've seen in the last, you know, 12 to 18 months, like the organizations who are really getting this right and making big progress are those that, yes, absolutely putting things in place for underrepresented groups or to support individuals, but at the same time thinking, how do we move our system forward and address some of those systemic barriers that might be preventing an individual or a group of individuals from thriving in their work?
I love how you compare the individual to the ecosystem, because my experience has been, if you train and coach a woman to have more confidence and all of those skills that make her a better leader at all levels of leadership, but the ecosystem has not been addressed, what ends up happening is you have a very skilled woman who then decides to move on to a different company. And I've seen that time and time and time again, when the onus is put on the individual to try to adapt to the ecosystem, they decide to leave.
Absolutely. And when I first started working in this space, I was working for a consulting firm in London. And alongside my day job, I was head of diversity for the region. And this was one of the real trends that we saw, and we couldn't figure out what was happening, but we would invest in programs for women and we'd invest in coaching. And then 6 to 12 months later, they would exit the organization. I remember my sponsor at the time saying, like, well, what's happening? The program mustn't be any good, or the coaching mustn't be any good. And it was exactly as you said. They would come back in and they'd think, well, I have done all this work on myself. I feel more confident. I have a clear vision for myself. And you know what? This is not the place for me, because it's never going to happen here. So they opted out. And often that would be going to a competitor or setting up their own business or mm-hmm. becoming an entrepreneur, whatever it might be. But really, it took some time, I think, for us as an industry to realize that that was what was happening.
Yeah. And catching on quickly, and I know this is part of what Talking Talent focuses on as well. So this is a great segue to another question I wanted to ask you is, where should companies be investing their time, energy, and resources in the coming year to make progress in working on those ecosystems?
I would say, I mean, starting with that mindset is the most important thing. So, and different organizations will have different needs in terms of pockets of talent that have maybe been previously overlooked or who have found it difficult to thrive in that organization. And my advice would be, absolutely, you know, put things in place to help those individuals or those groups to rise and achieve all that they can. But really, it must be anchored in understanding the system that they're in. And what that can look like can be sponsorship programs where, you know, your senior leadership population are brought into the program. They have an active role to play. They are serving as sponsors and mentors to, you know, to individuals who come from underserved groups, but that they can, and making it easy for them to see what their role is in all of it. Because again, I think that's another piece is for, you know, we talk about, you can only really harness the power and the benefits of diversity and inclusion if it works for everyone in the organization. And that's not to say that, you know, we want to avoid the difficult conversations, or, you know, that it's about everyone trying to make it work for everyone, but everyone has a role to play. So how do you harness in that? Is it a sponsorship program? Is it an allyship program? Again, at the heart of Talking Talent, we are a coaching organization. We really believe in the power of coaching as a solution to this work. And again, I think this is one of the reasons that we really believe in this, is because often a mistake that is made with this work is we don't consider the intersectionality that can be at play for an individual in terms of all of the various different aspects of their identity that they're bringing to work. So we might put them in a box to say, okay, well, you're a female, we'll put you on the women's program, or you're a member of the LGBTQ community, so you're going to go on this program. And where we see coaching really play a part is because we meet the individual where they are and understand what are their needs and where might there be something that's holding them back that we can work through in a coaching scenario. So again, I would say there's something there about seeing the potential of coaching and harnessing coaching as a solution to this work. And then the other piece, I guess, we're seeing again, and with organizations where there has been nervousness or scrutiny around this work, and particularly in North America with the Supreme Court ruling, you know, if there are certain risks with some solutions or some interventions, let's focus it on what are some of those interventions that cut across and almost like take the dialogue to another level. So we see clients who are investing a lot in their leadership population and helping leaders to see that actually getting this right isn't about, it's not a nice to have, or it's not the right thing to do, or it's not about making certain groups feel better. This is about harnessing the potential of every single person in your team and in your business. And who wouldn't want to do that? So framing it in that way, I think has helped to take some of that heat or some of that, concern out of the conversation. So yeah, so those would be the, I would say, remember the system, think about your system and how do you frame any of your interventions in that, the power of coaching and how can you leverage coaching as a effective way to move this forward, and then focus on those leadership superpowers that, again, you know, take the conversation beyond DE&I and help leaders think in that way.
Mental fitness is your capacity to respond to life's challenges with a positive rather than a negative mindset. What diminishes your mental fitness is internal saboteurs. Saboteurs are the voices in your head that generate negative emotions in the way you handle life's everyday challenges. They represent automated patterns in your mind for how to think, feel, and respond. They cause all of your stress, anxiety, self-doubt, frustration, restlessness, and unhappiness. There are 10 different saboteurs, but not everyone is impacted by the same ones. There's a combination of 2 to 4 saboteurs that are likely more familiar to you. Are you curious to know which saboteurs are impacting your performance, wellness, and relationships, and how they do so? To take the saboteur assessment, go to positiveintelligence.com/saboteurs. You can also find the link in the episode description right in your podcast app. It's hyperlinked, so you can click right on it. You can also reach out to me afterwards for an insight session if you'd like to dive deeper into your results. So again, to take the saboteur assessment, go to positiveintelligence.com/saboteurs and find out exactly what you need to do to overcome your saboteurs. I love how you frame the solution as being customized to the organization, but personalized to the individual. That's been my experience as well, is that trainings are great, forums are great, sponsorship is great, but all of those will miss certain needs of certain individuals. And, you know, leadership training can look different for a woman as it does for a man, or as opposed to a new leader versus an advanced leader. So if we don't have some level of personalization in the solution, then we're going to miss people. They're not going to get everything that they need.
100%. And I often think back to, again, when I was first working in this space and researching in this space, for me, you know, yes, I was a woman in a very male dominated environment. But having grown up I grew up in Ireland, we have a very matriarchal culture. So, you know, women rule in Ireland. I grew up with brothers. My parents fostered kids as well. And we had a lot of foster brothers. So I grew up in a very male dominated environment. And when I started to come up against challenges at work, I actually felt being female in many ways worked to my advantage, because I was often would say things in a different way, or I would come across and I would get noticed more readily because I presented myself differently, or I had a different way of coming at a solution. The points of my identity that I felt were often difficult was I was a psychologist, and at the time I was in a consulting firm that was predominantly engineers, and psychologists and engineers think very differently. And, you know, comments were made about like, oh, you know, psychology, that's kind of witchcraft, and can you read my mind, and do you have a crystal ball, and, you know, all of those kind of very tired stereotypes, or I don't even know if we would call them stereotypes. So that was one piece. And then the other piece was that I had come from a very working class background. And again, I was working in an environment which was quite middle class, you know, English, Oxbridge educated people. And again, I felt very different to them. So it was interesting starting to do this work and being encouraged to seek out solutions or programs that were geared towards women. And I was like, well, the women bit's not my problem. It's these other two things. And is there a program for, you know, working class psychologists working in an engineering firm? No? Okay. Well, that would be more helpful to me.
Or can we have a program for the engineers to learn how to work with blue collar psychologists?
Exactly. And at the time, what really helped me was I had some incredible mentors and a coach who were able to, you know, work that stuff through with me. And again, that's one of the reasons why I think coaching is so powerful in this work, because you can, you know, as you said, like, you can meet the person and be very personalized with that.
Mm-hmm. And every person, as you're talking, you know, it brings to mind how everyone has different skills and talents that they bring to the table. And this is why coaching versus advice giving is more powerful, because I could give someone advice that's based on my experience, like, oh, here's how I solve this problem, which might not work for them because their brain doesn't work the way my brain does. They don't have the same skills or experience I have. What we need to do is coach that individual to help them find the solution that's going to work best for them in that situation. And so how you handled, you know, being in a consulting firm with all of those engineers, like, your solution to how to, you know, navigate that environment would have looked very different, even for another woman who was a psychologist. Yeah. She might have had different skill sets and abilities.
Yes, exactly. And I think training interventions in this space do play a part. And I think there are some fantastic solutions out there. But I think all too often we rely on training as a quick fix. And when I talked about, you know, in 2020, there was this huge rush to do something. I think there was that over-reliance on training and that sense of, well, we can put our leaders through a program on unconscious bias, or teach them about the things that they can say or not say, and how to navigate certain situations. But without that opportunity to do the reflection and build awareness and really do the work on yourself, because this is such a personal topic. And I think, unlike other realms of organizational behavior where you maybe can train it, this is one that I think takes ongoing, you know, deep reflection, deep work, and again, considering how you're coming into that situation and all the things that you're bringing into that with you in terms of your identity.
Yeah, it's ongoing. So Mary Claire, I'm curious, what are you most proud of in regards to the work that you're doing at Talking Talent?
Oh, we could spill the rest of the time, but that might, the listeners might get a little bit tired of me just going on about all our great clients. I would say one of the things that I'm most proud of is that when we, in the work that we do, and it really speaks to some of what we've already talked about, but we pride ourselves on that deep impact piece and going where we need to go to help an individual, you know, to move forward, whether that's an individual who's felt stuck in their career because of an aspect of their identity, or, you know, the leader who's tasked with managing a team and doesn't know how to relate to certain people, but really that impact piece. But also, I think related to that, and this has become really relevant in the last 5 years, is that we welcome the whole person conversation. So we recognize that people exist outside of a 9-to-5 or a 9-to-6 paradigm. And when we're sat in front of our computers, or we're in meetings, or in whatever workplace context, all of those things that we bring from our lives, like our family, the worries that we have, the concerns that we have, the particular life stage that we're going through, we're bringing that into the workplace. And the work that we do really takes all of that into consideration. And in some cases, our interventions are very much focused on how do you make all of that work. And the things that really I suppose, keep me going on the days when it's, you know, when it's, you're having a tough day and it's, you know, it feels hard, are the stories that we hear and the anecdotes from our coachees. And we had one recently where a coachee talked about the impact of the work on not just on her, but on her daughter, who felt that it was suddenly easier to have conversations with her mom because of the work that we'd been doing, her wider community. She had stories about, you know, how she'd been able to apply some of what she'd learned and just going into some of those situations with a very different mindset. And then her boss as well. So she talked about how her boss was finding it easier to have, you know, difficult conversations with her because of what she was bringing out of our program. And it's, you know, we have a butterfly actually in our logo, which is also, it's one of those little illusional things where it's also two people talking. But we often talk about the butterfly effect of our work, where it's not just that in the moment, how is it impacting the person, but, you know, everything that happens around them and the knock-on effect that has. And I think that's what makes us really proud to be in this space doing what we do.
Yeah. And you bring up a good point where, you know, change can be difficult for people at first, right? You have that manager where everyone seems to be kind of toeing the line and doing what they need to do. And then we bring in opportunities for people to get training and coaching and support. And all of a sudden people are bringing up issues. Not that the issues are new, but that they never felt like they could bring them up before. It can be easy to assume at first, wow, things have gotten worse, right? Now we have all these problems that we didn't have before, when the reality was the problems were there. There was probably turnover that was happening, and people were quietly just making an exit because they assumed nothing would ever change. But if we can get through that initial, like, okay, now we're talking about all the problems and this feels scary, what can be achieved on the other side ripples out into families and communities and all sorts of relationships inside and outside of work.
Yes. And I've seen this, Jodi, throughout my whole career, because as a scientist and a psychologist, I've always been very obsessed with measure and impact. And I know certainly earlier in my career, I would have got very disillusioned, where exactly to your point, you would be tracking, you know, data and metrics and all sorts of different things. And you would see it exactly that. It gets worse. And it's like, well, how can we be having, you know, this impact? And then, but it does get better. And I always say to, you know, to clients and to folks that I'm coaching who are in that space, like, this is a good sign. Like, you need to lean into this period, because this is a sign that it's, you know, this is a sign that it's working. And I mean, I'm one of my heroes in the world of psychology and organizational work is Amy Edmondson, who first obviously was coined the term psychological safety back in the day. And in her most recent book, she actually talks about this, goes back to some of her early research, where she showed that organizations and teams where there were high degrees of psychological safety, I think it was in a hospital where she was doing her research, and they reported higher levels of accidents and, you know, near misses and safety issues. And again, she had that moment where it was like, well, how can this be? And then what she saw through her research was that those were the teams who were having the honest conversations and were really being transparent and, you know, having the difficult discussions, whereas other teams, it was all hidden beneath the surface and things looked fine, but they actually weren't fine.
Yeah. And so it can look scary on paper, but then I'm looking at a stat from Talking Talent. And one of them that really like jumped out at me was a 50% reduction in the risk of staff turnover. Like, that is almost unheard of, right? Because like, talent is one of the big, I guess I would call it an issue. The issue a lot of companies are having right now, you hear about it with the military as well. Like, there's not enough talent to go around. So one of the solutions is don't lose your talent. Like, keep your talent.
Yeah. And it still baffles me as to why in some organizations we have to work so hard to articulate the business case, because we know that it's so evident. If you get this right and you have an environment where people can come to work, they can bring their best, they can bring them their all the aspects of their identity that they want to bring into work, and they feel able to challenge, they feel able to share ideas, they feel able to be honest with each other and with their manager, you're going to get that, you know, that performance from them, that discretionary effort, and they are going to stay, and they're going to, you know, they're going to recommend it to their friends, they're going to be ambassadors for your brand. It just, I mean, it has been so well documented. And I think that is one of the, you know, the ongoing challenges or hurdles, I think, is to continue to help business leaders see that and to help them understand that this is not about, you know, doing, it is doing the right thing, but that's not, that's not why we're here. It's about really harnessing those benefits.
Right. All of the reasons you listed earlier for doing DEI work, I was like, those are good reasons, but it's really about getting that buy-in. Like, what is going to be most meaningful for the people who are the decision makers and are going to approve the changes that need to be made? It's not just because it's the right thing to do or because it feels good and it will make people happy. It's because this is what's going to make the difference in your business and your business thriving, or like just trying to continue to survive like all of the challenges of a rapidly changing marketplace.
Yeah. And I think that what's encouraging to me, the generations that are entering the workforce today, my oldest niece just started her first, she graduated from university this year, and she's just started her first corporate role. And those generations demand this. This to them is, you know, non-negotiable. And I think that businesses that haven't yet woken up to it, they're going to have to wake up to it soon, because, you know, there are a generation coming through where, yeah, this to them is a non-negotiable. And I think that's really to be celebrated and encouraged.
That's a quotable right there. I think that's a good note to end this conversation on. And for those of you who are listening, Mary Claire and I are going to be doing an executive forum in the coming months. More to come on that in a later episode. I'm really excited. I think it's going to be kind of a part two to this conversation. But Mary Claire, before we say goodbye, where can people find you, find out more about you and Talking Talent and the work you're doing in the world?
Yes, absolutely, Jodi. Would love to connect with anyone who's listening today where this has resonated and you want to hear more or have a conversation. So all of the usual channels, LinkedIn, Twitter, our website, we are very active on social media. So please do give us a follow and we can continue the dialogue on those channels.
Awesome. And for those who are listening, all the links that Mary Claire and where you can connect with her will be in the show description. So you can find that right in the app you're listening through. Or if you're listening on the Women Taking the Lead website, you can scroll down. It's towards the bottom of the page. And Mary Claire, thank you for taking the time to inspire and enlighten us. We are all better for having met you.
Thank you, Jodi.
Thank you so much for listening to the Women Taking the Lead podcast. I have three small favors to ask. If you are not yet subscribed to the podcast, hit the follow or subscribe button so you don't miss out on the upcoming episodes. Know anyone else who could benefit from this episode? Please share it with them. And if you are looking for leadership development opportunities for yourself, your team, or your organization, reach out to me. We can customize a program that meets your specific needs. You can reach me at Jodi@womentakingthelead.com. And as always, I hope this was of value to you, and here's to your success.